Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. This is your host, Sasha Adi, and I have secured Glenn Ellis. He's here, and sorry about the technical difficulties earlier. I'll read you a little bit about his background again, and then we'll bring him back on to impart his knowledge and wisdom on you. Our special guest today, Glenn Ellis, is a health communications educator and complementary medicine consultant. He's formally trained as an herbalist and a homeopath and has a line of herbal products. He lectures in the U.S. and abroad about complementary and alternative medicine and is a favorite guest and commentator on radio stations around the country. He also contributes a weekly web advice column for yourweb.com and has multiple publications, including his book, Witch Doctor, spelled W-H-I-C-H Doctor, A Guide to Good Health. He's president of Strategies for Wellbeing, LLC, a health education and consulting company based in Pennsylvania, where he consults with national corporate clients on promoting and providing health education for consumers and providers. Glenn was also the very first guest on the PCOS Challenge radio show, and we're very excited to welcome him back. Welcome back, Glenn.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And I do apologize for whatever the technical problem. I was trying desperately to get back to you there.
Well, we're very glad to have you here. I'm doing well. I'm doing very well, and you know, I'm just ready to learn from you. And there are other people here ready to learn from you as well.
Well, I am so grateful, and I will do my best to be a contributor to this vast body of knowledge that you've been imparting to your listeners.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, Glenn, can you just, you know, give us a little bit more information about you, your background?
Well, I mean, as you kind of summed it up, I guess one of the, you know, in essence, what I really have really just committed myself to doing in a variety of media platforms is just to be able to impart and empower people with the kind of information and knowledge that will empower them to be able to take better control of their life and their health and to make more informed decisions. All too often, too much of the decisions that we tend to make about our health are made in the absence of enough information to truly understand, A, both, you know, what it is we're really dealing with, or even more importantly, to understand what our true options are. So I really, you know, pride myself on being able to bring to the table, you know, additional information so that people can, as I said, be able to make good decisions about what's best for their health.
Okay, and that's really, really, really good mission that you have in life. So can you just give us a little bit of background information on alternative medicine and complementary medicine?
Well, you know, it's really, you know, as you are probably well aware, becoming more and more popular every day here, specifically in the United States. And but putting it in its proper context, it's important to understand that, you know, complementary and alternative medicine is practiced so widely around the globe that the United States really is one of the few countries, and particularly when we talk about what they refer to as developed countries, is one of the few where complementary and alternative medicine is not an integral and mainstream component that's embraced by the medical profession. You go to other countries, you go to Canada or all throughout Europe, you know, certainly in China, in India, and even in Africa, the actual medical professions always include complementary and alternative medicine in their, you know, vast arsenals of treatments and therapies and modalities when they look at how best to address a person's condition. In fact, in many of those countries that I named, including Japan as well, I should add, the medical professionals will often find that conventional medicine as we know it here in the United States are typically the things that are looked at as last resort. They're not options and treatments of first resort. So, you know, when we look at the history, we're talking of, you know, 6,000-7,000 of year history where this has been the primary focus of medicine. I think 84% of the world's population is, in terms of an actual number, 84% of the population of the world actually utilize complementary and alternative medicine as their primary source of medicine. And so what we're finding here is that more and more, as I mentioned, every day we are seeing it becoming more and more inclusive in that practice of medicine here. One of the challenges that it faces is the extent to which, excuse me, the pharmaceutical industry and in many ways the medical industry in and of itself utilizes both its lobbying power and the protocols by which medications are introduced to medicine, use those kinds of mechanisms as ways to, as I see it politically, interfere with the ability for folks to actually understand that these are viable options. So there still is a lot of, I hate to use this term, but scare tactics used about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, right now the criteria for things to be considered, you know, medications or prescription medicines involves them to have to go through clinical trials and FDA approval and et cetera.
Right.
So because of the vast availability of herbs and vitamins, they're so freely available in terms of natural, as they looked at as natural resources,
mm-hmm.
it is cost prohibitive for a company that provides or produces and distributes herbal and natural supplements to get involved in that process. Anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion is what is spent on each medication that we find available by prescription at a pharmacy. So when you talk about, you know, vitamin C or echinacea, which anybody, you can't get a patent on echinacea or a patent on vitamin C so that it's protected as medications are. So it's cost prohibitive for one company or one organization to just invest that kind of money and not have any way from a business point of view to be able to see a return on it. But at the same time, I think it's important to understand that there still are some very basic kinds of things that need to be taken in consideration as people look at the precautions that are important to keep in mind when we talk about approaching it. So there is a sense of knowledge and information that's necessary for people to be able to make wise choices as it relates to that. And so hopefully, you know, during the course of the program, we'll be able to talk about some of those things.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes when herbs or herbal remedies are suggested for, you know, for any number of ailments or you know, health maintenance, there are people out there, the first thing they say is, oh, but they're not FDA approved or they're not evaluated by the FDA.
Yes.
So, yeah, so I see what you mean where, you know, the whole scare tactics thing where people.
And Sasha, you know, and then the other thing is to, you know, to look at, when we look at, okay, yeah, they're not FDA approved, but when we look at the things that are FDA approved and look at the things that happen to us in terms of negative outcomes, side effects, reactions, and all of those types of bad outcomes, then we look at the dismal failure of that process to ensure that what you're doing is safe anyway. So it's a very, very delicate balance that we have to maintain in terms of our understanding as we approach that. I mean, something as simple, what we think is as simple and harmless as an aspirin, you know, 25,000 people a year die from taking aspirins, at least FDA approved. Now, interestingly, that aspirin was approved so long ago that if it were put through the same type of approval process today, an aspirin could not pass the approval process. It's very important that we all understand this kind of thing so that we can put it in its proper perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what do you think is the best way to integrate herbal remedies and alternative medicine into one's overall health management plan?
Well, I think the most important thing is to, A, first understand and appreciate the value and the importance of having a good medical doctor, an MD who has good training and understanding either in general medicine, if that's what your concerns are, or in specific medicine if you have some need for a specialist. And as we talk about looking at the kinds of issues that are directly related to PCOS patients or individuals who have been diagnosed in that regard, then as specialists go, you know, I would tend to think that an endocrinologist is the most important person to make sure that they have in there, along with their OBGYN, the gynecologist. Those are the two most important people that would be, crucial to one's care. And then when we talk to go to your specific question, from that point on, you want to make sure that that individual is not just open to complementary and alternative medicine, but willing, even in the absence of their actual experience or understanding of herbs, but willing to work with you to make sure that you can come up with some of the best knowledge as you make decisions about what supplements to use. So that, for example, if you have a supplement or an herb or some type of nutritional product that you have come across and have heard may be helpful in your particular situation, well, you want to be able to be working or under the care of an endocrinologist or a gynecologist who is amenable to you coming to them saying, hey, I've heard about this new supplement that many people are finding some success with this same condition that I'm dealing with, and I wanted to know if you will help me research or if you'll review the research that I've come up with and give me your professional opinion. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important relationship to have with your provider.
Right, and, you know, but that's a major complaint of many women with PCOS, or at least who I've come in contact with. They don't think that their MDs are really willing to work with them on the alternative medicine arena.
And so what I say is this, right? It's if you look at a person who owns an automobile, and when they need to find a mechanic, and there are certain kinds of mechanics that are so prima donna that they will only work on your car and be willing to work with you if you are a certain kind of driver and you only, you know, and you agree to do certain kinds of things to your car. But if you're a very, you know, like me, a very lazy kind of person in regards to making sure you're on top of every little thing, those kind of mechanics are very difficult to work with, and they also can become very condescending to you. Mm-hmm. Well, you should have been in here six weeks ago to get this oil change, and this is not good. So I say all of that to say it's important that you do the due diligence to make sure you find a mechanic who truly understands who you are as a driver and what your attitude is, that you don't want to replace every little thing, every little time they hear noise, or if you are that kind of person, you want that kind of a mechanic. So the same kind of logic applies to how it is we approach who it is we get. So all too often we find that we go with accepting the specialist that's referred to you by your primary care doctor, or the one that your girlfriend is using is the one, you know, that they, you hear this is the best person. So that person may have a total, opposition to any kind of conversation about herbal remedies and natural remedies. But that all means that's not the one for you. You need to find the one that's for you, that understands and respects who and what you are. And then you have to, once you get that match, then you have to be willing to trust and accept the suggestions of that person, so that after you take them this herb and say, what do you think about it, and you give them the information you know about and some websites where they can find more information, or the book that you got some information about it, and they review it and they have a conversation with you and they say, well, while you're on this other medication that I've prescribed, I would really suggest that you not do anything else to potentially interfere with it. So in that way, you got a good, healthy relationship that's going to ensure that you're going to be willing to follow the supervision of your medical doctor, but at the same time be able to embrace and incorporate those things that you feel strongly about. Because ultimately, let's remember, this is your body. It's not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, you're going to have to live with whatever decisions, whatever outcome. You got to live with it. So whoever you're working with is going to have to appreciate and respect your right, your ability, your privilege to do what you feel is best for you ultimately.
Absolutely. And PCOS in itself is proving to be somewhat of a difficult sort of complication that many of us have in our lives, where we're not able to find even an MD who's knowledgeable of the syndrome.
Yeah.
So it's quite a task to find one who's A, knowledgeable of the syndrome, and B, willing to incorporate some sort of alternative or complementary medicine.
Well, you know, what I find is interesting is how important, not just with PCOS, but with many kinds of diagnoses and things that are considered syndromes, and that's a real key word, and maybe one day we can really talk about that in greater detail, because syndromes are really not actually specific diagnoses as much as they are the result of a grouping of symptoms that if enough of them are present, clinically and medically, they can then conclude the diagnosis as being that type of syndrome. And we find that with AIDS, for example, which is, you know, an acronym that stands for an acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So AIDS itself is not actually a disease. It's really what they are able to use as a something to hang their hat on, or a diagnosis, only after enough syndrome. I think there are a list of the list is up to either 19 or 20 different symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
That if you have 9 of those symptoms, then clinically and medically, a doctor can legally say that you have AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and without going too much into that topic, you know, just to show you where my logic is coming from, there are many people who actually have been diagnosed with AIDS who are not HIV positive, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because
of the symptoms.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bring that up because PCOS is probably, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the most recognized and the most common of all hormone disorders that affect women. And so as a syndrome, we want to understand that it's a hormonal imbalance that has really been linked to the way the body processes insulin. So that does not mean that there's one specific cause of that. As you know, there are many different things that have been looked at as contributing factors, but there's no one thing that they can say, well, if you have this one thing going on, then that means you have this condition. So,
absolutely.
So all of that being said, once again, I go back to the notion of referencing an endocrinologist, which is the person whose specialty in medicine is to be able to address disorders of the endocrine system, which is the system of glands that produce all the hormones in the body. So that person doesn't necessarily have to be a specialist in PCOS as much as they have to be a specialist in understanding the delicate balance of hormones that exist within the body and how best to really identify the production of the normal and healthy levels of hormonal production in each of these glands, and then to look at where the disorders are. And so the more we broaden our understanding of this type of concept, the more women will be able to understand how possible it is for them to address this situation, but, you know, in the absence of what they think are a wide number of specialists in this. Every day people become specialists in it only because of them having to find more and more opportunities to better improve their knowledge base of the syndrome. But
yeah,
it's not because they have some special training that makes them a specialist. Their specialist, their ability to become and refer to a specialist is the result of the amount of experience they've had in treating patients who have that diagnosis. So the endocrinologist is really the key person in my mind.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We have someone on the line I think would probably want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Let's open up the line. Area code 573, do you have a question?
I'm actually glad that I was even on hold because I could hear the discussion. It was very helpful.
Good.
But I wanted to ask if, and I haven't been able to hear any of it, so if this question was answered already, I apologize. But I was wondering, I know that you're talking about PCOS being an, you know, endocrine situation, but is there a point where you're going to have medication to manage it, or does that just depend on the person?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there, let me rephrase that. I think the point that you could easily reach is the point at which the symptoms that are created as side effects of the imbalance associated, the hormonal imbalance associated with PCOS, the symptoms that are manifest will dictate what and if you have what types of treatment and if you need treatment. For example, one of the symptoms that can arise out of the person having this syndrome could say, for example, just be that you'll have elevated cholesterol levels.
Okay.
So that could result in you being it being suggested that you need to be on some type of a statin drug, Lipitor or whatever the specific drug may be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that there's a drug for
PCOS
itself.
Okay.
And so it's really going to be a result because, once again, remember, we're talking about an imbalance, a hormonal imbalance. Mm-hmm. And once you have an imbalance of hormones from any one of the glands that are part of the endocrine system,
mm-hmm,
that then has almost kind of like a ripple, the potential for a ripple effect that can then impact the production of hormones from another gland. And it could be that second or even that third gland that's affected that will be the contributing factor that causes the actual manifestation of the specific symptom to you. There are some women who have irregular, you know, menstrual cycles. There are others who have, as I mentioned, the elevated cholesterol levels. Some start to see symptoms of heart disease. Others have actual endometrial kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Others have obesity as an issue. So each one of those can be the cause or the justification for the recommendation that you start to take a particular medication.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's the point at which you now are in a territory where you can start to explore viable complementary and alternative options to what the medication can be. For example, looking at this manifestation of these high cholesterol levels.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the case and they say, well, we need to put you on this statin drug, then you can start to look at other complementary and alternative options that address
to that.
So that can
that
be
problem.
Anything from red yeast rice to
uh-huh,
apple cider vinegar. It could be chromium picolinate. It could be aged garlic extract. So there are numbers. So now you see, well, I've got all of these options.
Uh-huh.
So you then look at where's your cholesterol level. How high at risk are you with elevated cholesterol? So that'll determine what kind of time frame you have to work within to exercise the option to utilize some of the complementary and alternative medications.
Okay.
The statin drugs that are going to be prescribed are going to be things that have a much more powerful effect on the body.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be the things that have the greatest ability to try to work as quick as possible, but more importantly, they're going to be the things that have the greatest propensity for some very harmful or and or negative side effects.
That was the question, my next question, because I'm still in the whole child-rearing years, and I don't know how or if there is any research. I haven't really looked about research on the negative effects that some of these drugs are having on, you know, women and, you know, their children, or, you know, just is there like birth defects or, you know, other long-term problems that children experience when their parents are on or when the mother is on, like the Lipitor to manage cholesterol or glucophage or something?
Well,
like
for example, I know that, for example, when we talk about, if we just looked at Lipitor or statin drugs as a category,
uh-huh.
we'll find that the most prominent things that happen are things that will impact the liver. And
okay.
So you can put that in its appropriate context, or it starts to affect the muscles. And so that, just say if we looked at the side effect of muscles as it relates to statin drugs, then you start to think about the uterus as a muscle and how then it can have an indirect negative impact in terms of premature labor, or it could cause, you know, just you can use your imagination and look at some of the possibilities that can come out of that. So
okay.
once again, I said early in the show how unfortunately here in the United States, these are things that are people start to be looking at as total last measures, total measures of desperation, where in other parts of the world, those are first choice, you know, these are options of first resort. So I would, you know, always encourage people just looking at statin drugs when they say, well, my doctor wants me to start taking this statin drug, Lipitor, and I hate to keep giving them all of this publicity, right? But
that's okay. I don't have high cholesterol.
Yeah, but still,
the
point being that what you want to do is say, okay, my cholesterol right now is 310,
mm-hmm.
and I need to, you know, I have to get it down. So what are the things in your lifestyle that are contributing to that? Are you
mm-hmm.
inactive? Do you
mm-hmm.
do you drink enough water? Those two things mm-hmm. alone can make a significant improvement in the
mm-hmm.
cholesterol, you know, the balance between the good and the bad cholesterols in your bloodstream. And then you kind of say, okay, what are the things in my diet that I can start to do? Although 80% of the cholesterol in the body is produced in the body, only 20% of your cholesterol level is the result of what you actually put in your body in terms of food.
But
the point is more important to focus on is just what are the diet and lifestyle things that I can do
mm-hmm.
that will automatically have a positive impact on this, and then you go from there.
Okay.
So each of these symptoms will have a similar kind of thought process, should have a similar kind of thought process associated with it that will enable you to appropriately analyze that sort of thing.
Okay.
And in terms of your concern about, you know, just childbearing and that sort of thing, you just want to continue to look at yourself holistically
mm-hmm.
and make sure that you're doing things and living in a way that contributes to just being healthy overall. Overall, your diet, overall your level of activity and exercise, your
mm-hmm.
your emotional state and how you're really nurturing and taking care of it,
mm-hmm.
and your attitude and all of those things. So there's just things that separate and apart from looking at PCOS in isolation that you just need to continue to look at yourself
mm-hmm.
in a very holistic way. And one of as ironic or crazy as this may sound, one of the good things about PCOS is that it has such a wide range of symptoms that it encourages one to be able to approach.
I know. It's like you have to do it, you know, in order
exactly.
to manage this.
Exactly.
You have to be healthy.
Exactly. So that's, you know, and see, you know, it's unique in that way as a lot of other conditions go, because many other conditions and illnesses or diseases are such, they're so single focus that it can cause you to be so consumed with just focusing
one
on it
thing,
that it's
right.
easily to neglect all the other aspects of your body and your health. Where PCOS is unique in a unique class that it has such a wide range of symptoms that, you know, everything, you know, excessive facial hair, body hair, and obesity, and mm-hmm. heart disease, and elevated cholesterol, and diabetes, all these things are so interrelated with PCOS that it's a good opportunity to be able to say, okay, let me look at my entire lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it can be the, they refer to this in Buddhism and a lot of Eastern philosophies as it's an opportunity to change poison into medicine. That because I've had this diagnosis of PCOS, from the time I was that diagnosed, my whole life has changed because I changed my entire approach to life and how I live.
Yeah.
And not just because I was diagnosed with diabetes, I've been on insulin ever since then, and nothing else has changed in your whole life. So it's really more of a blessing than a curse if you can have the wisdom or just the insight to be able to look at it from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I don't want to take up all the time.
Is that helpful?
It is very helpful, actually, because everything that you're saying is really sort of like where my mind was going.
Yes.
I think that it's one of those things where, when you realize that it's happening, it's a bummer, but, you kind of, now what's next? And I had one final question for you about just the weight itself, because I always had this thing in my mind. I know that I've sort of done this. I've played games with my weight a little bit because I could, I would decrease my carbs, my weight would drop, and I would have this thing with my cycle within the last year. I was diagnosed in 2005 or 2006, but my cycles have been regular. But just this past year, they've become irregular, so I have been able to cut out my carbs, my weight would drop, and then my cycle would come. But I was wondering, because I was able to do that, I had this little thing in my head, and it's not based on anything but what's in my head, that maybe if I don't have enough, maybe if my weight is too high, the hormones in my body, there's not enough of it to go around, so that's why it's not working, and maybe I should keep my weight as low as I can to manage some of the symptoms. I mean, I don't know if that makes a difference or not.
It makes a difference, but more importantly, it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
And once again, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to understand the endocrine system.
Okay.
Because I just think it's one of the least understood systems that impact our health that we hear about.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear very little about it, the interconnectedness of it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just single out weight, just this whole weight issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when we start with understanding that the liver is a chemical factory, it's like a factory in the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the liver as an organ is responsible in over 200 different bodily functions.
Okay.
There are 200 different functions that the liver carries out.
Mm-hmm.
Among those functions are to be able to store the fat, the excess fat in the body.
Okay.
And it also is also responsible for producing the primary chemicals that are then sent to the thyroid to help the thyroid not only produce the chemicals it's responsible for, but to make sure the thyroid is healthy.
Okay.
So now when you talk about the excess carbs and the fats in your diet and keeping them down,
uh-huh.
the more of those that you consumes in their diet, the more work that's put on the liver. So the liver can become sluggish, and now not only is it going to accumulate and kind of reach its maximum in terms of storage, but now that excess fat is going to be now released in the bloodstream, and it'll end up adding to the fat cells in the body. It'll also have a difficult time making sure that there's not too much sugar or glucose in the bloodstream, which now makes you start to move in a direction toward insulin sensitivity, having insulin sensitivity issues, which now are one of the things that is a contributing factor not only to diabetes but to obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Then as this liver becomes so sluggish from all of that extra work, it's now inefficient in producing the chemicals that the thyroid needs. So on top of all those other contributing factors that the liver goes through that contributes to obesity or having weight management issues, but now the thyroid isn't as robust and vibrant as it's capable of being, so now you've got metabolism issues in terms of how fast your body metabolism is working so that there's no natural mechanism that's helping to burn calories and et cetera. So it kind of becomes layered, and it continues on from there.
Okay.
You follow me?
I am.
Okay.
I am.
And so all of those kinds of things. So going back to what you discovered just through in your own little laboratory, which in this case is your body, you know, you saw what happened as a result of you cutting back on those things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you saw the result being seen in how your cycles became regular.
Right.
There's a direct relationship between that.
Uh-huh.
So what you want to do is take that as, you know, something that you can really use as good knowledge and information to support your ability to focus more on how and what you're eating,
mm-hmm.
and even as importantly, when you're eating. Because the other thing that happens is when someone approaches trying to reduce their caloric or carbohydrate intake,
mm-hmm.
they also will reduce the frequency at which they eat. So
right.
if you've got a sluggish thyroid that's not really working well or optimally, and it has a impact on your metabolism,
mm-hmm.
and you're eating less often,
mm-hmm.
your body's metabolism is going to slow down even more because there's another part of your body that has enough sense to say, wait a minute, we really don't have the luxury to be burning up too many calories too quickly because she's not eating regular enough to give us more fuel. So we got to be careful how much excess fuel we get rid of.
Okay.
So now you're making it even more difficult for yourself to maintain and or lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you want to be eating those
regular.
And regular means like I know people say 4 to 6 meals.
Well,
but
I think a lot of that is going to be based on your lifestyle. But
and
you can tell by your energy levels and your attention levels and concentration spans and those sort of things.
Uh-huh.
But in essence, I just always kind of like to look at it from a visual point of view of if you had a fire going in the fireplace,
mm-hmm.
and you have a little pile of wood, right, you know, to continue to feed the fire. You don't take all the wood and just put it on all at one time.
Right.
You kind of keep it
mm-hmm.
one log here, one log there,
mm-hmm.
to keep so that you'll have a steady flame going.
Got it.
So you want to just keep just enough going to keep that flame going, which is going to keep that metabolism. Because ideally your goal is to convince your body by actual proof that it is getting a consistent stream and intake of fuel for it to operate.
Okay.
And that's why if you notice, whenever diabetics are given nutritional instructions, the one thing you'll always hear them say is, I'm supposed to be eating a lot of small meals throughout the day.
Uh-huh.
And that's the reason that's why they're told that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they simplify or oversimplify to them to make them think so that it'll keep their blood sugar levels, you know, so you don't put too much sugar in your stream at one time. But in reality, it's so that it'll maintain the kind of input so that the liver, the thyroid, and in the case of diabetes, the pancreas all understand that there's enough stuff going on to ensure them that there's going to be an adequate supply of nutritional and caloric intake to sustain them and their ability to produce the kinds of hormones that each of them are responsible for.
Okay.
Yeah, well, in the case of diabetes, that's important for some women with PCOS it's always important for us all to know these things, but as we all know, PCOS is a risk factor for diabetes, if you are insulin resistant, or you know,
right.
if you have these maladies.
Absolutely.
So,
well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling in.
And I hope that was helpful for you.
It was very helpful. It really was. Any support in this whole syndrome, as you say,
yes.
is very. And the endocrinologist, I think that's like a. I've been debating whether or not going to the doctor over these last couple months, just because. You know, I know what's wrong with me. I don't want to hear any bad news. But,
yeah.
you know, if with the endocrinologist, I'm more motivated to go and see
absolutely.
Them because I
and,
feel
and
like they're going
that.
To target.
Absolutely. And when you do that, you know, find the right one. I can't emphasize
mm-hmm.
that enough. So, everyone, that first appointment, every first appointment is your interview of the doctor.
Okay.
Not to go there with the intent that this is my first visit, so I want, you know, I'm coming here for them to do their first intake of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming there to do my first interview with them.
Right.
To see if this is my doctor, you know. And they say, hi, how you doing? Welcome. I see this is your first visit. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what can I do
for
you? I'm here today to see if you are my doctor.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Right. And you know what? You can go to, I don't know if you've been on the PCOSChallenge.com website.
I have.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So you can go onto the resources page and
okay.
you can click on Find a Doctor Now, and it links you to endocrinologists, so you can see if there's one close by you who is actually knowledgeable about PCOS.
Okay, great.
Let me just say this before your listener hangs up. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Maisha.
Maisha. This is what's important. I said this is the most common disorder, hormonal disorder, affecting women.
Mm-hmm.
The most common. Now, if you think about all the other things that you may have thought would have held that title,
mm-hmm.
and to now find out that it's actually PCOS,
mm-hmm.
you got to think about how many people are actually undiagnosed.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. True.
To really
yeah.
get a sense for how truly prevalent this is, that 1.1 million is nothing compared
mm-hmm.
to the actual numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They already know that half of the people who have diabetes have never been diagnosed, for
yeah,
example.
Right.
So, and that same kind of approach is applicable when we talk about PCOS.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not... It's not, you know, and that's the other thing that I want to emphasize and really, you know, share, is to really understand this is not some isolated thing going on. And that's why I wanted to talk about, as I did earlier, about the nature of it being a syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Maisha, thank you very much for calling. We do have other callers.
No problem.
Thank you very
yeah,
much
no
for
problem.
Calling in with your
uh-huh.
questions.
No problem.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Okay, you can stay on the line and continue listening.
Oh, I can listen. Okay, great.
Yes,
thanks.
Okay.
I can't hear it. Yeah, okay.
Hi, caller from 615.
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you? Do you have a question for Glenn Ellis?
I do. Hi, Dr. Ellis. Thank you for taking my call.
How are you doing?
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first one is there a difference between PCOS and hypothalamus and Maria, where you don't have a period?
The connection is, as we just closed that last conversation out, is to understand that the Anna Maria is really a part of the range of syndromes. And this is another great example to understand that we're talking about a range of syndromes that is so inclusive that so many women could be diagnosed with PCOS that aren't, and they just have a syndrome. Some people, women have just these irregular menstrual cycles, or they may have excessive, you know, menstruation during their cycle, and not be diagnosed with PCOS. But according to the definition, they could. So there's a direct relationship to that. Absolutely.
Are they two different things? My daughter was diagnosed about 7 years ago. Very hard to get a diagnosis. She just quit having periods.
Uh-huh.
Hair came out a little bit, and to this day, whether her weight's up, whether her weight's down, no matter, she just can't have a period. She just will not start. She started.
How old a woman is she?
Now she's 22. She was
uh-huh.
13 when she started her period. And I had talked earlier on another show. At
mm-hmm.
15, she had back surgery. On her spine, and
uh-huh.
of course, no one will say that had anything to do with anything. After that surgery, she never had a period again. One doctor or a couple have written down hypothalamus anaphoria on her chart, a possible PCOS, hypothalamus, and I keep thinking, is it the same thing? Is it treated different? Is that totally something?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure just like you, my logic automatically says there's more than a coincidence that after her surgery that her period stopped.
Right.
I just think that's just way too much of a coincidence, particularly for a 15-year-old woman, young lady.
And I'll have to say, going back to talking about the endocrinologist, I found to be the most arrogant. I've been through seven. You mention holistic alternatives, and they laugh at you.
May I
ask myself? Uh-huh.
I was just out of curiosity. I was just curious. Where part of the country are you in?
In Nashville.
In Tennessee?
Huh?
Well,
you know, if you have a colleague or anybody you could suggest, that would be wonderful.
Well, I would. My primary suggestion, I think you should go to the website. As Sasha mentioned, now I think that would be one of the most important things. And what you may find yourself having to do is contact or connect with an endocrinologist in another state and let them know the problem that you're having, and they may be able to find the needle in the haystack in Tennessee for you.
Yeah, just know that you do have options. You do not have to stick with an MD who is arrogant or who does not want to listen to you or, you know, cater to your needs, because like Glenn said earlier, you're your own advocate. You're here. You're interviewing them. You know, they're there to help you. So if you're not getting that feeling from your doctor that he's willing to work with you and your needs, you know, go on other interviews.
I know that in my heart, and I know that's right, but it sure is awful frustrating when you pay the visit, you pay that bill for the doctor's visit, and they're so arrogant.
Yeah.
After another, you kind of get beat down a little bit. You know, you get kind of frustrated. But I'm still trying.
And I don't know if you ever watch the show on Discovery Hill, Mystery Diagnosis. These people spend years and years going from doctor to doctor, hospital to hospital, until, you know, getting multiple diagnoses, until, you know, there's one doctor who can pinpoint exactly what's going on. So the lesson to be learned here is, don't, you know, especially since you have a gut feeling that, you know, something is wrong, you need the answer, you need to go and you need to find another person who is able to help you to pinpoint what exactly is going on.
Go to the website and find another doctor, even if it's in another state.
You can go to the PCOSChallenge.com website and go to the resources page, and there is, it says find a doctor now, or find a PCOS doctor now, and you can type in your zip code or whatever to see if there are endocrinologists in your area. And you can even type in the specialty. You can type in PCOS.
And I'll say this, Sasha.
Yes.
It's so frustrating. I've done that not on your website, but on other websites.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll say they specialize or deal with PCOS, and they do. With metformin,
mm-hmm.
birth control pills, and
that's
my point. They do, but when I don't want to take the pill and I don't want to be on metformin, and then they act like they don't have that alternative. That's crazy. No.
When you just keep it moving, you know, and that's how I am with my doctors, you know. I just don't tolerate some, you know, because you are paying them and they're supposed to be compassionate, you know. So if you don't get that feeling, you just move it on, you know, move on and find someone who will cater to you and your needs.
Right.
Okay.
To Dr. Ellis about the thing about the back surgery. I'm like you. There's just no doubt in my mind that had did something to her. They said that the PCOS gene, that she had it, although it doesn't run anywhere in my family or my husband's.
The PCOS gene?
Anyway, they said that the gene or the presumption to have this when she had that back surgery and was kind of off her feet, she was off her feet for about 3 months. It was dormant in her body, and then at that time is when it came out in her.
You know what? I think you should probably go to, especially if they can't explain it to you in terms that you truly understand, or it sounds to you like you don't believe, you know, just,
right.
I do think that you should probably, and I'm really glad that you called back in because I was thinking about you from the other day. So I'm really glad you called back in. My advice to you is to keep searching. Keep searching, and especially if you are into alternative and complementary medicine, like Glenn said, find some
a good doctor like him.
Yes,
in my area. That's what I'm searching for. I'm searching for a Dr. Ellis in Nashville.
You know what? So are you on the PCOSChallenge.com website?
I am.
Okay, so can you find me and send me an email?
Okay.
Give me your contact information, and I'll try to help you out.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling.
Good talk to you.
Okay. Okay, Glenn, you're quite popular today. We still have more callers. Are you up for it?
Come on, bring them on.
Okay, area code 901. 831?
Yes, hello.
Hi, do you have a question for Glenn Ellis?
Yes, I do. I was on here before. I'm Gabrielle. You probably remember me.
Hi, Gabrielle.
From the team. Hey, how are you doing?
Everybody is Gabrielle.
I wanted to ask, what do you think are some good questions to ask your endocrinologist? Because, I mean, I went to one before, and, yeah, he gave me all my levels and everything, and he showed me, but after that, nothing really happened. I need good questions to ask. Any suggestions?
Well, would you say what was it that he or she did when you did go? What kind of
I got blood work, and then after that, they really didn't give me any other suggestions or what I should do. I mean, they did the normal thing was say, you know, go get on metformin, and then have take your birth control pills. And I don't necessarily want to do that. They really make me sick. Both of the things. It made me sick, literally. Like, I feel sick and anemic all the time because of those. And if there's something I could do naturally to, you know, help at least my insulin levels, that would be great. But I need good questions to ask so that I can get what I need out of the endocrinologist.
Well, the first things I would do would go back. You said they put you on metformin and what? And
birth control pill. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then I would first say, find out specifically what it is, if you don't already know this, what it is that is expected to happen as a result of being on the metformin.
Yeah.
What is it that you're looking for? What's the outcome that's expected?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Right?
That's a great question.
What needs to take place is you have to have a broader range of options for treatment, right?
Yeah.
You know, metformin is an insulin, I mean, an insulin medication.
Yeah.
That's basically used for diabetes or to help to deal with high insulin levels in the blood system.
Yeah.
So, you know, but you need to let them articulate exactly what it is that they are using that medication with the intent to accomplish. Then you can start to understand better if what things that are already in your control in terms of either diet or lifestyle that you can automatically do that could eliminate the need to do that.
Yeah, because the insulin to the resistance has been a big problem for me especially because that really hinders the weight loss.
Yeah,
I can try so hard, and if I'm not on metformin, I don't lose weight. It does not happen for me. I don't care how much I diet or exercise, it doesn't happen. So, and another question. Is there any other natural remedies maybe that I could use for that?
One of the things I would certainly suggest that you look much more carefully into to get a better understanding of how it can be helpful for you is mm-hmm. chromium.
Yeah.
Chromium picolinate specifically.
All right, and what does that do?
Chromium is actually a mineral.
Uh-huh.
You know, like calcium and magnesium. It's one of the
minerals.
But it's a very interesting mineral because it's a trace mineral, meaning that there's not a lot of it that's found in the human body.
Yeah.
But it's an insulin that comes, I mean, it's a mineral that comes from the food sources that we eat.
Oh.
But because the typical Western or American diet is so chronically deficient in chromium, now how it works is that chromium is actually found in the soil that food grows in.
Mm-hmm.
So because the way agricultural industries work today, either they are, all of the food is either grown either in, you know, kinds of controlled environments,
yeah.
or when it's grown in the ground naturally, it's done so crops are harvested so rapidly and replaced and regrown for the next crop, the soil doesn't have enough time to replenish itself.
The nutrients and everything, all that stuff.
So the food that grows up looks wonderful and tasty and delicious, but it's deficient in chromium.
It's not as nutritious for you. It's not having everything you need or supposed to be getting.
Exactly. And in this case, specifically, what's missing is the chromium. So one of the things that you could consider certainly would be supplementing chromium, and I've used it extensively over the years with people that I particularly have worked with, both diabetics and people with weight management concerns. Mm-hmm. And, I think the standard dosage of a chromium supplement capsule is 200 micrograms, not milligrams, right? And so a typical dosage could be somewhere between 400 and 800 micrograms per day, which is not a whole lot to address a chromium deficiency. And that can be excellent in helping to address that type of an insulin insensitivity kind of issue as an option. And then when you look at the other aspect you asked about, which is the contraceptive that you're on, what is it that they're doing that for? Is that to help to deal with PMS? Is it to help to deal with menstruation, the cycle, with the flow of the cycle? Is it, is it for what, what is the real purpose of that so that you can go through the same line of logic and reasoning as we just went through with how you can look at and identify chromium as another option? You'll be able to identify other options for that as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hi, Gabrielle, is your mother on the line too?
Yeah, I think so, actually. She's listening because our internet wasn't working. So.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can stay on and listen. But
thank you very much
for calling in.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay. Okay, Glenn, well, I'm going to actually ask you about a few herbs and minerals that a lot of people have been asking about in relation to PCOS.
Okay.
And one.
Stump the host kind of thing.
Okay.
The clock is ticking. I'm ready.
Okay. Buckwheat farinetta.
That's a very interesting one, and it really is an excellent source of fiber. It's an excellent source of it has tremendous nutritional value. And farinetta is actually a form of it that is least processed and has most nutritional benefit for an individual. And it's been shown, a lot of people have been getting great, great results for that. So I certainly think that would be one that would be absolutely consider.
Okay. And milk thistle.
Milk thistle is considered, it actually has a reputation of being a liver tonic. So it's specifically an herb that is used traditionally to address liver conditions, liver disorders, to strengthen the liver. It's a tonic. And we had a little conversation earlier with one of your callers that we talked about all of the demand that's on the liver. So this is a tonic that helps to cleanse the liver, helps to strengthen, helps to restore it, to improve its ability to function well, because it's really almost kind of like the point of origin for everything else that goes on in the endocrine system. So before you can, I would think logically, before you can start to look at the individual glands, the thyroid or the pancreas or the ovaries, I think you want to make sure that the thing that's really kind of like kicking off the parade is as healthy and vibrant a state as possible. So milk thistle is one of the things that is used traditionally to accomplish that type of purpose.
Okay. And anything else that you could probably swear by for the liver, for the liver health?
For the liver, I also think, I know that dandelion, the herb dandelion, is another one that's excellent to look at for that purpose. It has a lot of excellent results. And, a lot of times people who are in the southern and southeastern part of the country of the United States will remember how sometimes as kids or their mothers or grandmothers would talk about a spring tonic, and they would have these dandelion tea tonics. And, you know, I know Jamaica, a lot of different countries where dandelion is really a very well, you know, embraced kind of a tonic. So dandelion teas, in some country they use the root of dandelion, and it's roasted, and it has almost like a coffee substitute. But it's a great tonic to cleanse and purify and strengthen the liver. So that's another one. Those are dandelion and milk thistle are probably the most prominent herbs that I would certainly, that come to mind whenever I think about, you know, things to help to support the liver's health.
Okay. And what about the heart?
Well, the heart is really clearly prominently involved in all of these discussions that we're talking about. And one of the things that I always look at are the things that are categorized as, you know, as omega-3 fatty acids. Mm-hmm. And people are most popularly will know about fish oil as something that is used in that regard. But there's a lot of variation in terms of the studies that have been looked at fish oil. You know, so there's some that say it's excellent, there's some that say it's kind of okay, and some say it's not good. And one of the other oils that has the same kind of reputation as, you know, a wide range of support for or against would be evening primrose oil. But the thing that I think is absolutely superior and superb when we talk about these omega-3 fatty acids is flaxseed oil. It is by far the most superior of them all. And I want to just take it a step further and talk to the listeners that may want to consider using it. It's important to understand that flaxseed oil is very, very, unstable. And so when it's in an oil form, you find that it's sold in health food stores or other places wherever you get it. It's in a refrigerated section, and it's also it's in a glass jar, and it's a dark jar because light and heat will destroy the benefits of the oil.
Okay. Yeah, so I've heard the controversy about flaxseed oil versus fish oil. You know, a lot of people recommend fish oils, and some people say, okay, I guess probably because of the volatility of the flaxseed oil. I don't know if that's really the controversy behind that.
Yes. Well, the volatility is one of it. The flaxseed is, I mean, but it's superior, so you want to just get it, know that it needs to be kept refrigerated and not exposed to any kind of heat. That's just the real point I wanted to make was just for that purpose. But it's, in my opinion, even in addition to that, it's a another benefit is that over fish oil, it's just the controversy and the kind of paranoia, and in many cases justified paranoia, that centers around things like the mercury in fish.
Mm-hmm.
So you can totally avoid any of that type of controversy just by looking at how best to to address that.
Okay, and one of our people in the chat room is asking about krill oil. Now, this is new to me.
How are they spelling that?
Krill oil, K-R-I-L-L. I guess I'm going to have to look that one up. She said her acupuncturist told her about krill oil. So I'm going to research this one.
I've heard of it, but I'm just trying to see how. Well, krill is actually unless I'm totally mistaken, but I don't think so. I think krill is that's actually a fish.
Oh, okay.
I'm almost sure that it's a particular kind of fish.
Okay.
And I think it's a cold water fish like mackerels and codfish.
Oh, okay.
And herring fish. So krill is one of those. It's a fish from those cold water, from the Nordic seas, you know, Scandinavia, Sweden, Finland, which is where those oils come from. So that's just one particular kind of oil. And I don't know enough about krills to be able to say if there's something superior or unique about it. It may come from only a certain section of the waters that have been less contaminated by, you know, seagoing vessels and that sort of thing. And it may have less, so there may be something that makes her acupuncturist see that as superior. It could just be a multi-level marketing product that somebody is doing. So I don't know enough about it to be able to say that that's a superior one. But I can certainly let your listeners know that krill oil is just one form. It's like cod liver oil or you can use krill oil. So it's just it's the name of a fish.
Okay. Makes sense. At least now I know the name of another fish.
Yeah.
So what about Chase Tree Berry, Vitex?
Vitex, Chase Tree Berry. It's a very, it has a tremendous history behind, Chase Tree. It has a long, long history, all the way back into predates the medieval ages in terms of how long it has been used for all types of problems that are considered female in nature. And so, even back in, but centuries and centuries ago, it was very widely used in a lot of convents by nuns to address a lot of hormonal problems that nuns would have. It's a female uterine tonic in many cases. It's used as some people have traditionally used it as an aphrodisiac. In regards to libido, there's been a lot of work and a lot of usage of it to help to normalize hormonal imbalances, particularly amenorrhea or dysmenorrhea in terms of excessive menstrual flow or no menstrual flow. So that's been that type of an herb. A lot of pregnant and expecting and new mothers use it to help to either increase or they can suppress lactation or, the production of milk. So it has a lot of histories. It helps progesterone levels because it helps to helps the pituitary gland function in a way to raise the level of the of progesterone. It also, we had talked earlier just about excessive hair growth,
mm-hmm.
and it can also create a reaction or some type of a process in the functioning of the pituitary gland. Well, I'll say that three times twice.
Mm-hmm.
So that it helps to release and free up a specific hormone that helps to stop or limit this excessive hair growth. This stimulation, or this follicle stimulation, is really what it is when we talk about excessive hair growth. You got excessive stimulation of the hair follicles. So that Chase Berry has been used for that, but it really has a wide and long history around the world, particularly in Europe and India. Our two countries will have long histories of using Chase Berry. So that's an excellent one for your listeners to do some research and look closer into as an option.
Wow, yes, I would say so, especially since, it's quote-unquote the female for the female.
Well, red raspberry has another kind of a similar kind of reputation, but it has nowhere near the kind of reputation in terms of its effectiveness in the kind of areas we're talking about.
Okay. Jemima Sylvester.
That is actually an herb that is used that has been traditionally used for people with diabetes, but it's also the kind of herb that you would use under the same kind of considerations when we talked earlier with your listener about the chromium,
mm-hmm.
because of its impact in terms of insulin sensitivity and what it can do to help to address those types of symptoms that arise in an associated way. So that's the kind of thing I would certainly suggest in that regard.
Okay. And, so you already touched on chromium. There's some other minerals and vitamins that women with PCOS are researching. For example, the B vitamins or B12 shots. tests or things like that.
Well,
can you go into that?
Well, let me just say that, you know, the B12 shots, see, once again, I don't want us to lose sight on what we talked about is just the range of symptoms. And so when you start to look at the range of symptoms, one of the most prominent ones is just because of the stress and the irritability and the anxiety that is constantly associated with women dealing with these types of issues. They've become so run down that energy and listlessness are very big kinds of issues. So the B12s are things that are used to help to kind of like give them some kind of a boost, you know, just to kind of help them make it through the day, so to speak. So I don't know that therapeutically in terms of actually addressing some of the direct symptoms, that's one I would see as helpful. However, I think that B6, on the other hand, is something that is clearly has some type of a history and a reputation of having been effective for women, particularly when we look at B6 is really a member of the B vitamin family that has been shown to help with alleviating a lot of the more emotional kinds of symptoms that most people will tend to relate with PMS symptoms.
Okay.
Which is this big overlap with those kinds of things. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
You were breaking up a little there.
Yeah, so something happened with connection here.
Okay, I think I can hear you better right now.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
So
I'm getting an echo for some reason, but that's I'll deal with that. So anyway, we're talking about vitamin B6, which is involved with, you know, all of these different processes in the body. It processes, you know, the amino acids, particularly in this case, the hormones, and as I talked about, what it does to help with the regulation of the mood. And all of those are the kind of things that people will typically associate with PMS symptoms. So,
well, let me tell you, that's probably a good thing for people with PCOS to look into.
Absolutely.
Because,
you know, in all fairness, just to bring another perspective to it, I don't have any direct personal experience in terms of personal relationships, but I have quite a few of my colleagues and other people that I indirectly or have come in contact with who are men who have women in their lives who have been diagnosed with PCOS.
Mm-hmm.
And because they understand so little about it, they always, I find it's not funny, but it's amusing. I find it amusing that they always reduce it down to being able to talk about it by saying, man, she's always got PMS.
Yeah.
It's like she's always got PMS. It's like even when her period's not on, she's on PMS, right? So
I'm familiar with that.
Right. Do you understand what I mean? So
yes.
So it's a very, very prominent thing, and one of the things that has clearly been shown to be very, very helpful for the women and obviously indirectly for the men is to really be able to consider looking at the benefits of some additional B6. Now, I know that from my experience with some of the people I've worked with over the years, I find that about 50 milligrams a day of B6 helps to alleviate those symptoms, especially ones that are related to the mood itself. And just in terms of the diet in itself, in and of itself, you know, B6 is the kind of thing that's in a lot of whole grain cereals, wheat grain has it, fish, brown rice, what else? Soybeans has it. And then to keep in mind, and I wanted to just have, I don't know what our time is like, just to tie that into magnesium, because there must be enough magnesium in the body to properly utilize the B6.
Okay. Yeah, that was next on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magnesium is a very, very important mineral for women looking at addressing issues associated with PCOS, and because estrogen actually enhances the a body's ability to utilize magnesium. If you have too much estrogen in your body, which is often the case when we look at different situations associated with PCOS, the magnesium intake is less than it needs to be, and then you got these shifts of magnesium that are brought about by estrogen that leads to a lot of PMS symptoms, and as well as other kinds of symptoms. Like some women will start to experience migraines, others have muscle spasms, and it just goes down a spiral from there. So you want to make sure you're supplementing yourself with your diet or your supplementation regimen has enough B6 as well as magnesium.
Right, and do you think that it's easy enough for us to get this from our diet as opposed to taking supplements?
Well, I think the short answer is yes. The longer answer would include to say yes, but unfortunately for a lot of these things, you have to eat so much of it because we're talking about deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about recommended daily allowances. We're talking about trying to supplement for a deficiency. So that requires, or we're talking about our body's demand for additional amounts of things beyond the recommended daily allowance. So that's why supplements tend to be appropriate, in addition to making sure that you're eating good, balanced diets that are associated with those sort of things. So magnesium is one of those things.
What about zinc?
Zinc is another one as well, because it's another one of those trace minerals like we talked about with chromium. So those minerals, you know, are very important. But I go back to also, Sasha, just when we talk about how important it is to make sure that you understand the real benefit of this being the condition that you are challenged with as opposed to others, because there's it impacts such a wide range of possible areas and situations in the body that it's an opportunity to really take a look at all of the aspects of our diets and our lifestyles and start to really structure new ways of living, new ways of eating, new ways of approaching life. Because what I find with not singling out PCOS, but with all the kinds of things that I encounter with people from cancers, the heart disease, every kind of condition, people bring to the complementary and alternative medicine model the same mentality that they left, which is, I have a headache. I need a pill for something for my headache.
Mm.
I have heartburn. I need something for heartburn. So that's considered an allopathic model, as opposed to something that's much more holistic or homeopathic, that really looks at, okay, what are all of the things that are connected with my diet and lifestyle that I need to make sure are in place? Because it's kind of like building a house. It's like you can't go and pick out a plot of land, say, I'm going to build me a nice house over there, and then you start focusing on what type of door you're going to have. You got to say, okay, to build this house first, let's make sure that we look at what do we need to do to ensure that the very foundation that the house is going to be built on is firm and is secure and is tight and is waterproof and the basement won't be leaking. And so we tend to overlook that kind of thing and only want to focus on, like, wow, what kind of curtains am I going to put in my bedroom, or, you know, what kind of rug do I want on the den floor? So we start to look at that isolated approach to addressing something instead of realizing, hey, this is the perfect opportunity for me to say, let me just revamp and really revisit and restructure and take a new, fresh approach to how I'm both eating and living, and why,
right,
you know, why I need to stay away from that kind of food because it has this type of excessive processing to it, or it has a high saturated fat level, and saturated fats are clearly the kind of thing that will put tremendous workload on the liver as well as, you know, be a contributing factor to heart disease and other kinds of things. So you can start to use this as an opportunity to really restructure and reframe the whole dynamic.
Okay. Yes, and then, so do you suggest that in order for us to get all these vitamins and minerals and things that are, you know, sustain our health, do you suggest that we take supplements and multivitamins instead of going and getting B6 and a vial of zinc and, you know, and
all these other things? I think that you don't, first of all, well, I want to revisit just one point I wanted to make earlier. When we talk about things, let's just use the B6 as an example.
Mm-hmm.
If you as an individual are someone for whom PCOS manifests prominently in the form of things that are considered PMS kinds of symptoms, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then vitamin B6 is clearly a supplement that you need to be doing. Everybody doesn't need to do that to have PCOS. So I say, you know, make sure you're eating right. Everyone would benefit in this day and age, in this society we live in, by taking a good, high-quality multivitamin.
Good. And then how do we choose a good, high-quality multivitamin?
Well, I always, when I talk to men, I'll give one answer. When I talk to women, I'll give another answer. And the answer I'm going to give, because this is primarily of interest to women, is mm-hmm. that the same way you say, when you want to go and buy a nice pair of shoes, and you know when you would just want to get some shoes just for one event.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly if there's some shoes, like you're going to one particular event, and you know you're just getting some shoes to match one outfit, and you're not going to be wearing these every day, or you're not going to look forward to having them a long time, you know what stores not to go to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you know how to tell if it's a good shoe or a good quality shoe by looking at the construction and design of it. And in the same way, we have to take that attitude and say, okay, I'm going out. I need to get me a good multivitamin. So you can go into a health food store, and it's not uncommon to go in there, and they may have 25 different vitamins. So,
right.
So the first thing I say is, okay, let's look at what the vitamins are made of. So the thing to narrow that category of 25 down to 7 right away is, okay, I only want a vitamin that's made from food-based products. I don't want anything synthetic. I don't want any fillers in it or additives or natural coloring or any of that stuff. So now you're down to 7. So at that mm-hmm. point, now you can look at how many I want to take a day. Do I want one a day? Or because of my patterns and lifestyle, I don't mind taking 2 in the morning and 2 with dinner or whatever. So then that reduces to 7 down to 3. Then it's just a matter of how much you want to spend on that given day. So, okay, I want to only buy vitamins once a month, so I got something that here's a thing that has 60 tablets in it, so that means 2, and you have to take 2 a day, so that'll last me a month. And this mm-hmm. bottle of 60 tablets of multivitamins will cost me $30. So
okay, so
now you're saying, okay, for 50 cents a day, or I mean a dollar a day or whatever, that's what I'm doing. I'm spending a dollar a day to get a good multivitamin. And so it's not rocket science, Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this sounds impressive coming from me because only because this is all I do. But trust me, what I'm talking about is information and knowledge that's accessible to everyone. That's the beauty of why I'm
yeah.
so passionate about the kind of work I do. It's because I'm just saying, hey, everybody, we can all do this.
Yeah.
there are no geniuses with this stuff, you know. And so I say all of that to say that the same kind of approach and logic that we apply, if you're going out, like I say, you know, you think about, I need to get a pair of shoes for tonight, right?
Right.
You are not going to the Gucci store.
You're
not going to do that, right? You know, but if you say, you know, I'm now going to be working in this area, or I'm starting my own business, and I'm going to be going out to, you know, trying to get these new clients, or I know I'm going to be, having to attend these kinds of things on an ongoing basis. So, you know, I'm going to go. I might even go and have a seamstress make me a tailor-made, you know, business suit.
Right.
You know, and I'm going to get me a nice pair of very high quality shoes so that when I walk in the room to try to meet my new client, I won't look like I'm coming to beg for business. I'm going to look like they're going to say, wow, now that looks like somebody I want to do business with.
Right.
So it's the same kind of approach.
That's a good analogy.
I try to break it down.
Okay, I'm going to broach one more topic, and this is pretty common on the PCOS airwaves lately, acupuncture. Acupuncture. We hear that it can stimulate ovulation, lessen pain. What do you think about this sort of alternative method for not only PCOS? Acupuncture is used for so many different things.
Acupuncture is remarkable.
Okay.
Now, if you look at an acupuncture in the history of this country, which is, what is this? This country is, 200-some years old?
It's old,
roughly.
Yes.
If you look at it in that context and look at medicine, and you know, the history of medicine in America and when acupuncture first became even talked about in it, then it's certainly something to be skeptical about. But when you look at China, where for 6,000 years acupuncture has been one of the primary, you know, modalities of the practice of medicine, and there's no way anybody, if breathing was not beneficial to the human body, we wouldn't even be nobody would breathe for 6,000 years. So just the fact that there's a medicinal skill and treatment method that has been in use for over 6,000 years says that there's something that we need to pay attention to. And
absolutely.
I have seen personal experience of how it has been helpful in addressing a wide range of people using it, everything to stop smoking to chronic and severe pain to increasing libido in men and women for different types of respiratory problems, heart disease, cancers. Now, these aren't cure things, but they are absolutely complementary to other kinds of modalities of treatment.
Okay.
So I would absolutely encourage, you know, people, but it's like everything else. You can get a good mechanic or you can get a bad one that'll mess your car up, too.
Absolutely. So you need to do your research.
And, you know, and which is why I want to applaud you for making sure that, you know, women and the men who love them have a clear resource in the website that you've, you know, taken the time and energy and resources to pull together good, solid information. So the research, the ability to do the research, you've made that even easier.
Yeah,
so I'm just saying it's a really empowering time for women with PCOS and a whole lot of other things that have been so marginalized and so under-resourced. You know, it's just barely within the last 15 years, all the medicines in America that were prescribed, I mean, that are prescribed and approved by the FDA, they were solely tested on men, right? So, you know, we went for decades of women going to the doctor being prescribed a medication that had never been tested to see how it worked in women's bodies.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, you bring up really good points, Glenn.
Okay.
And
that's a good thing.
Thank you. Yes, we're nearing the close of the show. There's about a minute left, and I have to tell you that you got a proposal from the chat room. This lady says, "I love this guy. Will he marry me?" I just had to let you know that.
Well, I just spent about an hour talking about what I'm capable of bringing to the table. So, like, what's the exchange here? What are we doing? That's very flattering, absolutely flattering. But
yes,
I do want to, if I may take a moment, and I would like to, you know, to encourage people that they certainly, I'm thinking I may and I'm just being presumptuous, you may have an ability for people to link to my site from yours.
Oh, absolutely, and please give us your information.
But my website is glennellis.com, and it's Glenn with two N's, glennellis.com. And I just also, you know, certainly think that it will be an absolute valuable resource for your listeners and as well as their families and the people that are close to them, for them to at least take a look at my book, Witch Doctor, because
mm-hmm.
the same way we talk about PCOS and really, you know, make it more accessible as a topic and a subject and an issue.
Right.
It seems manageable. You know, my book does that with a lot of things that all of us are directly touched by, either personally or by somebody that's close to us that we love and care about. And so, you know, I would want to encourage your listeners to, you know, and I have some other articles and things I've written and blah, 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 but that's a way that they can really kind of connect with. But I did want to just mention that it's in my opinion, a valuable resource tool to have for people to look at the book.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. And I posted your website on PCOSChallenge.com and in the chat room. So it's glennellis.com, and I encourage you to go to the site and see what else you can gain from Glenn. We've gained an hour and a half of his knowledge today, but I'm sure there is a lot more that we can get from Glenn Ellis. Thank you very much for being on our show, and we already have requests for you to come back. So,
well, you know, I would be absolutely honored. You know, when we had this problem and I was my difficulty trying to get on earlier at 6, I said, wow, maybe...
Well, didn't you notice I stole an extra 30 minutes from you?
Maybe Sasha just doesn't know how to tell me she don't want me to come back again.
No, absolutely not.
Maybe she gave the wrong number. So, I am absolutely, you know, privileged to be able to just to be a part of this tremendous and important work that you're doing, Sasha. And I cannot, you know, commend you enough for just without being asked or motivated, you know, outside of your own personal interest and commitment to do this and to really put this kind of time and effort into it. I just cannot tell you. You know, being someone who in a similar way works and has worked for, you know, more years than I care to admit, but I can absolutely value and appreciate what you're doing, and I want you to know that I am always available. As long as you're willing to do the work, you can always count on me being your supporter.
Oh, thank you very much, Glenn, and I will take you up on that. I have witnesses.
Okay, well, and tell my fiance I said hi. whoever she is out there.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks everyone for listening.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, and I want to thank you for listening.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.